There I am unmuted. I believe everybody can hear me.
Thumbs up.
There we go. Okay. Hi, everybody. So good to see everybody. This is the online version of the Pacific Group meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is an open meeting and all members of the community are welcome to join. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics will participate in our meetings. Good evening, everyone. My name is Duffy and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The format of the meeting is as follows. We will read a portion of Chapter 5, have two 10-minute speakers, read the 12 traditions, and our main speaker, followed by birthdays. Tonight, I'd like to introduce our first speaker of the evening is Tammy P.
Hi, my name is Tammy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, I don't know if you could hear me. Anyway, I'd like to thank Duffy for asking me to share tonight, and I certainly want to thank Morgan for trying to walk me through. There were some glitches with my iPad. I have a webcam because I do distance teaching. I'm a high school English teacher, and my webcam broke 2 days ago, so I was fiddling with my iPad here, and somehow Morgan was able to work through it. And again, that just goes with the theme that, you know, there's really no big deals unless I make them a big deal in my mind. So somehow I got on, and I'm grateful to be here. You know, I thought about sharing my story in 10 minutes, and I didn't think I was able to do that. So I'm just going to share a few highlights that have been meaningful to me. I just took a cake last week for 27 years, and that may not be a big deal to a lot of you. I know I'm what's called a coming up in the group. There's people with 30, 40, 50, 60 years sober, so I'm kind of at that, you know, coming up group, and that may not impress a lot of people, but it really impresses me, and it really impresses my family, because I could not go a day without a drink. I have no idea the price you paid for your seat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but the price I paid for any seat in any room in Alcoholics Anonymous is I drank away my six-year-old daughter and my five-year-old son, because a liquid called vodka was so powerful over my mind. It was more powerful than the love a mother had for her own two children. And many of you know me well, and you know that my kids and my grandkids and my family are my everything. So you of Alcoholics Anonymous never had to convince me the power of that clear liquid called vodka, because it enabled me to do things that I would be mortified to do in a sober state of mind. But when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to welcome all our new friends, you know, I talk to the girls I sponsor every day, and I talk about how hard it must be to be new in Alcoholics Anonymous with just a Zoom platform. And I'm so grateful to all the people that enabled this and make this happen, because when I got sober, it was three meetings a day, you know, everything I could do to just interact in the fellowship to stay sober. And so I give a lot of people credit for staying sober on this type of a platform. Anyway, when I came in, they didn't come running up, you know, and I want to say that I tried everything except Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober. And it wasn't until I finally surrendered my life, my will, and my drinking over to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I was able to maintain sobriety. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't come running up to me and say, get a big book, get a sponsor, take the steps and do this and do that. I was very blessed that the people that met me at the door sat down and they talked to me about my drinking, and they took me through the book, and they had me read the doctor's opinions, and they asked me questions, and they explained to me what alcoholism was, and more importantly, they explained to me what alcoholism wasn't. And there was no rush and there was no deadline, so that I could determine to my innermost self that I indeed be alcoholic. And they described the different types of alcoholics that are described in the book. And I was able to find myself in the description of what an alcoholic was. I believe in follow the leader's sobriety. I don't think there's any magic to this thing. I know a lot of people try to microwave their sobriety, like by, you know, going to all these things or all these, you know, things to promote or make their sobriety go faster. And I've learned in the 27 years at least that I've been in here that it's just slow and steady and suiting up and showing up. And those things that our old timers passed down to us, you know, be where you say you're going to be when you say you're going to be there. If it's at work, get there early, stay a little late, help out. You know, if it's being a parent, don't bring kids into the world and not suit up and show up and be a parent to them. And those are the things that I learned here. You know, a lot of times the girls I sponsor say to me, you know, I want you to take me through the steps and take me through the steps and take me through the steps. And, you know, and the book says, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any lengths, then you're ready to take the steps, which means that you have to show some willingness and some participation. At least that's how I interpret it, before we rush you through the steps, because I've seen people rush through the steps and the next thing you know, it doesn't work. And then they think AA doesn't work. So I was taken through the steps, but I was given a lot of time to participate in AA, you know, do the things that they required of me. And, you know, I want to say that I came here as a high school dropout. I had drank away my five-year-old son and my six-year-old daughter. And by learning how to first change the way I dress, change my language, start to make a commitment to sobriety, then make a commitment to a home group, then make a commitment to a sponsor, then make commitment to the whole process. You know, today I'm a licensed teacher in the state of California, and I've been teaching high school for 22 years of my sobriety. I lost custody of my own two small children, and through the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, not only was I able to receive custody back of my own children, and we don't promise you that here in Alcoholics Anonymous, but you have a heck of a better chance of reuniting with a family member if you're sober. And I was able to receive custody back of my children after a year of my sobriety. And through the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, my current husband and I, a lot of you know Patrick, he just celebrated 39 years of sobriety. And my little grandson needed to be adopted because his dad got sick, and the courts decided that Patrick and I would be the best candidates to adopt this little five-year-old grandson of mine. And that's a far cry from the girl that walked into AA and drank away her two children. So in 10 minutes, my message to you is the book tells us, it's not my opinion. We're selfish, we're self-centered, we're childlike, we're grandiose, and we're undisciplined. And I believe that the steps are not addressed to get you to stop drinking. They're designed to address that selfish and self-centeredness. You know, I ain't much, but I'm all I ever think about. That childlike behavior. You know, if you hurt me, it's really significant. But if I hurt you, hey, man, I'm sorry. Get over it, right? The grandiosity of always exaggerating and making things bigger than they are, or taking credit for things that I don't even deserve. And that undisciplined nature. And I believe most of recovery for me has been in step six, and it's just slowly over time suiting up and showing up and addressing those things. I believe that your very life is at stake in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous if you're an alcoholic of my type. I believe that to my innermost self. And I do believe that my primary purpose, not my tertiary, not my secondary, my number one purpose is, first, I have to stay sober myself. And then I have dedicated my life to always being there for another alcoholic that's suffering if they reach their hand out to me. And for a selfish, self-centered, grandiose, undisciplined, childlike woman that couldn't even raise her own two children, I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for what you've done with my life. And it isn't any one share. It isn't any one reading in the book. It isn't any one thing my sponsor has said. It's all of it collectively. And, you know, Clancy is my sponsor. If you're out there, Clancy, I want to thank you, sir, for always being at the helm of my sobership. And Clancy asked me four things when he agreed to be my sponsor. The first one was that acceptance is agreeing to what already is. And think about that. Acceptance is just really agreeing to what already is. Number two, he said, I don't have the right to wear my emotions on my sleeve and then walk around the world and infect everybody with my emotions. He told me that there's a peace in being powerless. And every time, even right before this meeting started, when they couldn't get me on, I felt anxious. And then I finally said, you know what? AA doesn't need me. I need AA. And if I can't make it to speak tonight, there are 600 other people that will step up and be happy to do the job and do it well. I'm just not that important. And finally, he taught me that life's going to have its ups and downs. Many of you know I lost my mom this year. My husband had two major heart attacks, and then he was diagnosed with throat cancer. My son became very ill, which made it that we had to adopt my beautiful little five-year-old grandson. I'm 60, my husband's 72. We're like raising a five-year-old, and we're exhausted. And you know what? I've learned that there's going to be ups and downs, but the one thing that's going to stay consistent is my sobriety. I came in here scared of everything. And at 27 years, I'm a completely different person than the script that I wrote or I thought I was. It turns out I'd rather hang out with my grandsons than be at big social events. I prefer meaningful interaction with people instead of mindless conversation. Gossip bores me, you know, today, and it used to be exciting. And I don't know when or where or any of that changed, but I have faith in my future. I have faith in my children's future. I have faith in the future of our country, and I certainly have faith in Alcoholics Anonymous continuing. I don't know how much I said, but I hope that you know that if you do not like the script of your life, whether you've been sober a long time or not, we have a path that we follow, and you can be happy, joyous, and free at any time if you just follow the path. I want to thank you for letting me share, and God bless all of you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Tammy. Thank you. Our next speaker is Jason W.
Am I muted? Yay. Okay, I'm staring at my face. I don't want to stare at that. Hi, I'm Jason. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Duffy, for asking me to share. Hi, guys. My sobriety date is August 17th, 2014. Yeah, and thank you, Tammy. Much like Tammy, I mean, there's so much to comment on. So those of you that know me know I'm pretty emotional. And I can't stop thinking about how grateful I am that I was able to get sober for my family when I did. I tried to purge myself before the meeting, so sorry. I've been drunk most of my life. I've been doing drugs most of my life, ever since the fifth grade. Sniffed a lot of drugs. I didn't sniff drugs to enable me to drink longer. It was quite the opposite. I would drink so I can do the drugs the way I needed to and fit in with everybody. And I just did that for years. My family never knew what was going to happen with me, where I was going to be for years. And not until I stepped foot into Ohio Street right here in Los Angeles. That was in 2013. I learned about A through a waiter. I ordered a drink, and this guy said, he goes, "Oh, I used to drink those." He goes, "But I quit drinking." And I looked at him, and he was glowing. He was literally glowing. His clothes were glowing. His shoes were glowing. And it wasn't the lighting. And that got my attention. And he told me, he goes, "I go to AA." And I go, "I think I should probably try that out." And he got real excited, and he pointed to Ohio Street, which was great because I lived right around the corner from Ohio Street. And walked by there a couple times very drunk, because I'm always very drunk. And I finally showed up on a Monday. And it was really intense and really weird because I didn't drink that night. I never not drank. I met Frank Jones. As you guys know, Dan Garcia, Cowboy Dan, he's gave me his number, and he took my number, and he called me, and he stayed on me. Sorry. Again, very grateful for Dan, because if it wasn't for Dan staying on me, I wouldn't have continued. You know, I got a glimpse of you guys and went, cool. And he stayed on me, and I got a big book, and I said, thanks for the big book. I'll see you later. But he stayed on me, and he stayed on me long enough for me to get it, for it to click. And I knew I was in trouble. I knew I was an alcoholic. And thanks to Dan, I learned what alcoholism was pretty quick. Real important part of my story. Well, a couple of things, especially if you're new and if you're anything like me, things got pretty painful for me pretty quick, because alcohol did a lot for me. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that until I was racking up days and weeks and then months, and it just got really, really intense. But I learned what alcoholism was, and I knew that there was a solution, and I just stayed on it. I stayed on with the program, and I kept showing up, and little by little, I was feeling better and better, and I feel pretty good today. While that was happening, my family hit some pretty tragic stuff, and just by default, because I was sober, I became a key player in really supporting my family. And that is thanks to you guys. You know, that's thanks to AA. And I was too miserable and distracted to know that at the time. But I was really there for my family. And then my dear mom, she got kind of stuck on her own. And I remember she was kind of starting over, and she was joining this church, and she said she wasn't quite sure what to do. And I said, well, Mom, whatever they got going on, just do it. You know, sign up for everything. And she's like, okay. And I go, what do they got going on? And there was like a book club, and there was this prayer meeting, and there was all these little things. And I said, just do all of it. And she said, okay, I will. Because I knew that would get her in the middle of everything. I knew it would get her a life. And I learned that from you guys. It's exactly what I did today. Really apologize for this. And then overnight, I lost my mom. But I'm telling you, I am so grateful because I've got four solid sober years with her. Five in her head, but, you know, four the way we count it. And I was just looking at some photos on Facebook. Her last birthday was her 75th birthday. And I almost didn't even go to that because I'm just used to not doing anything, you know, my entire life. And something in me, and some of you guys mentioned, like, you should probably be showing up to this party. And so I bought a ticket and flew up to my mom's 75th birthday party. And it's my background on my Facebook thing. And I'm telling you, I am so glad I would be so mad at myself if I didn't go to that. And that was our last party. That was the last thing I got to do. And as much as it goes against my religion, and I hate to say it, but that's thanks to Pacific Group, that's thanks to AA, and that's really thanks to you guys. And I'm so very grateful. Whenever I'm used to sharing at the Promises meeting. It's that little tiny meeting, and it's topical, and it's so easy because it's just, you know, it's a step or a promise from the big book, and a lot of times it doesn't apply. That promise hasn't kicked in yet, but it's topical, so it's really easy to share. So, I'm just being honest, and this is just what I'm grateful for. You know, I'm really, really grateful for you guys. I'm grateful for Zoom. I was really scared when this thing hit, because I don't ever want to go back. I never, ever, ever want to go back to any part of my drinking and using, not for a minute. And I know that, what's vital for me to not go back is fellowshipping and interacting with you guys. And so, I was very grateful when my phone rang and Duffy's name came up. You know, it's like getting the phone call from the mafia boss. You know, it's something. You're like, okay, uh-oh, you know. But I was so grateful that she asked me to share, because I know that that's going to solidify my sobriety, if for anything, just for tonight. You know, I'm grateful. And that's it. And if you're new, you know, really give yourself a chance. Just give yourself a chance. Anybody with any amount of time in Alcoholics Anonymous can help you. Learn what alcoholism is, you know, just learn what it is, because that's all the motivation I need for me to keep showing up. You know, I know what alcoholism is, and I know what's going to do to me. I don't show up for anything else. I show up because of that, and because it's vital. And the other thing I think is worth mentioning is don't let anybody drive you out. You know, a lot of us come in and we're wounded, and, you know, I mean, I'm hypersensitive to certain personality types, and, you know, it doesn't matter how people treat me in AA. I mean, I've got a lot of friends and I get treated well, so don't get me wrong, but that's not why I show up, and I don't let anything get in between me and my program, because, to quote Logan, without AA, my goose is cooked, right? So thank you for having me share, Duffy. And I'm done.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason. Great job. Thank you very much. every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Artie Manrod, we miss our candy. I'd like to introduce our main speaker tonight is Tim W. Welcome.
Thank you, Duffy. My name's Tim Whitcomb. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tim.
Hi. I'm grateful to be sober today. Thank you, Duffy, for inviting me. It is an honor and a privilege to be asked to participate. I'm an actor, or I've done some acting in my life, I should say, you know, community theater and independent film. I've had the opportunity to play Dr. Bob Smith on stage twice, which was a great blessing in my life. But you would think someone with that experience would be a little kinder themselves with the lights. I've got to get the lighting right here on my screen. Anyway, hi, everybody. I'm glad to be here. It's nice to see old friends. I saw Sharon Crane on the screen for a while, and you know, I've known Jeff and Duffy for a long time and a lot of people from your group. The first time I came down to your group, I was with Don Gates as his guest, and I sat in the front row. So that was my introduction to PG. I never know what I'm going to say when I have this opportunity. I don't have a set thing that I do. I can assure you of this much, the talk I give here this evening will not be nearly as good as the one I gave in the shower, getting ready to talk to you all. That one was crisp. I know there's several of you. I wish I'd been there for it. That's an old joke I've used many times, just trying to get comfortable up here, but I delivered that line one night and realized I was staring right into somebody's eyes when I said it, and I'm pretty sure I made that guy nervous. You know, he was doing, wondering what he got himself into. The thing that I love the most about the Pacific Group probably is that everybody gets busy quickly. You know, the last time I spoke for you guys was at the temple, and I brought my wife with me and a couple of guys that I sponsored, and the reaction going home from that experience was from them was, well, that was nothing like I expected it to be. That was a fun meeting. That was great. Everybody was doing stuff. And, you know, I remember speaking at Ohio Street one night, and it happened to be the meeting where they thanked all the people who had commitments, and everybody that had a commitment stood up. And by the end, the only people left sitting were the ones that I had brought with me from Santa Barbara. So it's the way I was taught also. You know, I really like what Tammy had to say about not rushing through this thing and not making anybody, you know, do the 30 days and a couple of weekend follow-ups or whatever that stuff is about. You know, read the first 60 pages and get back to me. I spent the first month trying to remember how to say, I'm Tim and I'm an alcoholic. Oh yeah, I got it right this time. Okay, I'm Tim and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I was pretty fried. I used to drink. I drank because I liked the effect produced by alcohol. And after a certain point in time, I drank because I had no choice but to drink. And then I hit that place where, you know, I couldn't drink anymore, and I had to keep drinking. And a lot of you know the loneliness of that experience. So I finally hit a bottom, which I define as things getting worse faster than I could lower my standards. I gave it a good shot. I tried to keep going, but I was burned out. You know, Jason, thank you for your 10 minutes also. That was my mom's part of my story, so I related to you there. In 1963, I committed a murder. And I won't go into all the details of that, but I was drunk and loaded at the time. And I was convicted of that crime. I was convicted of second degree murder in the state of California. And I was sent upstate. I had 5 to life under the old indeterminate. I had an A number, if that means anything to anybody. And I stayed high the whole time I was in prison, if I possibly could. And I usually could manage that. But one important thing happened that I didn't even understand the importance of at the time. The guy selling next to me invited me to an AA meeting. And I went not because I was an alcoholic. I went because it got me out of my cell, because there was coffee, pastry, free people came in from outside. Some of them were women, you know, real women. And I thought it was great. I sat in the back with my yard coat all buttoned up to my neck, wearing my shades at night, and I came to scoff, and I did not remain to pray at that point in my life. But I enjoyed it. Chuck Chamberlain came in there and spoke to us. Some of the other convicts had been doing that thing for a long time, and they were funny and articulate, and there was a lot of laughter like there is in these meetings, and I enjoyed it. I just didn't think it was for me. If you had asked me at that point in my life what the problem was, I would have told you that I'd had a series of bad breaks, unfortunate circumstances, and people who didn't understand. That was the problem. Bad breaks, unfortunate circumstances, and people who didn't understand. And it was all out there. What you taught me was, as long as it's all out there, I can't do anything about it. So eventually I was paroled. And I just picked it right up where I'd left off and got worse and worse and worse. And finally, things got worse faster than I could lower my standards. I was running around with a guy named Bob. Oh, I'll tell you this. In November of 1982, I was living on the street in Sacramento. I supported myself by petty thievery when I wasn't too drunk. And when I was too drunk, which is most of the time, I begged for money on the street. And I hated doing it. And I did it all the time because I didn't know what else to do. And I approached the last friend of mine who was still speaking to me. And she took me over to her mother's house. And they made up a little job for me. It was just made up. I moved some boxes around. I swept her garage. She gave me $20. I spent half of it on wine and half of it on a bus ticket to Chico. And I did what all tough guys like me do when they're in a situation like I was in. I went home to my mom. And I arrived at mom's drunk, as I had many times before. And when she answered the door, I said to her with all of the arrogance of the practicing alcoholic, "Don't worry about anything, Mom. I'm here to take care of you." And mom said, "I'm sorry, son, but you're dying. And I can't stand to watch it. So if it's what you have to do it somewhere else." And she gave me $20, and I spent half of it on wine and half of it on a bus ticket back to Sacramento. And I rode away thinking, what just happened? My ace in the hole was gone. This is another in a long series of bad breaks, unfortunate circumstances. Now even mom doesn't understand. I'm not trying to hurt anybody. But I was tramping around with this guy named Bob. Bob and I were drunk somewhere, and he said, "You know, we're dying. You know that." I'm like, "Yeah, I don't care. It's just taking so long." He said, "I'll tell you what, man, I get a little money at the first of the month. Why don't we go to Santa Barbara and get sober?" And I said, "Sure." Now, Bob could have said, "Why don't we go to Denver and get drunk?" And I would have said, "Sure." I focused in on the fact he got a little money at the first of the month. You know, this was new information. But he was a man of his word. First of the month came, he got his little check, he bought us bus tickets. We traveled down there, down here where I now live, Santa Barbara. And I got sober and he didn't. He changed his mind. I got sober living at the Salvation Army. God bless the ARC. God bless the Salvation Army. They gave me that step up off the street level that I needed. And there was, and I, when I went looking for Bob, because we'd gotten separated from each other, I went to central office, or I called central office first. Woman answered, and I said, "Have you seen Bob?" She said, "I know a few Bobs, honey, and how are you doing?" We talked briefly, and I ended up walking up there. She said, "Oh, you're that man looking for his friend. I still haven't seen him, but I know some people who would just love to talk to you. What do you think?" It's like, sure. I was done by then. So my mom was alive for the first 7 years of my sobriety. And I can't tell you the number of times that I thanked her for doing what she did, but I didn't thank her on that day when she sent me away. You know, bad breaks, unfortunate circumstances, mom doesn't understand. So, you know, I now manage that central office that I crawled into. Oh, I should tell you, I'm sober since January the 3rd, 1983. My home group is men who have lost their legs. We meet on Thursday nights in Santa Barbara. And 8 o'clock, we have a Zoom meeting going. Central office website in Santa Barbara is www.santabarbaraa.com. And we have a whole directory of Zoom meetings, and we'd love to see you. It's one of the great things about this whole deal is that we're getting people. I led a meeting in Fort Collins, Colorado this week, and half the people in the room were from Maryland for some reason. I don't, you know, I just talked and did what I do, but this is certainly a remarkable experience. And I want to welcome the newcomers and tell you that we're glad that you're here. We want you to know that you're welcome in this fellowship, that you're not alone anymore, that you don't ever have to drink again if you don't want to. I believe that now because it's been my own experience. And I was thinking about being new at this point. And just think, one of these days you're going to be able to say, "Hey, man, I got sober during the time of Corona. You think you got it tough? We used to have to go to meetings sitting at home in our jammies." Speaking of, you know, I put on, of course, a coat and tie because I'm speaking in Alcoholics Anonymous, but from the waist down, I'm in my red flannel jammies with the gingerbread men on them, you know. Been in them for weeks. Anyway, there was a guy who I talked to when I first got sober. He 12-stepped me. Guy named Dave. And I checked into the Sally, and after a week of restriction there, I got out, and when I walked out, Dave was waiting for me. He knew I was getting out that night. He said, "Hey, man, I'm going to an AA meeting. You want to go?" Like, okay. And sure. And he took me to this meeting, and I hated it. It was full of good-looking, friendly, smiling, happy people, you know. Dave had given me a big book, and I'd read it during that week. I was sort of locked down, and I didn't get it, but I'd read it. Kept putting me to sleep. And, you know, he took me to that meeting. They didn't call on me, and I'd read the book. But on the way back home, back to the center, I did something unusual. I told Dave the truth about what was going on. I said, "You know, I'm really glad you were here when I walked out the door, because there's a liquor store right across the street on the corner, and I've been thinking about drinking." Like I was going to surprise him with this information. I said, "You know, I don't want to get drunk, but I'm feeling better, and I may not be an alcoholic after all." And he said, "Tim, it's not up to me to tell you if you're an alcoholic or not. That's a decision you'll have to make for yourself. However, you've been around long enough already to know that if you are an alcoholic, for you to take that drink's a very dangerous thing. And," he said, "if you're not an alcoholic, You don't have to worry about it, because people who aren't alcoholic don't sit around and try and figure out whether they can drink or not. Let me think about that, Dave. What I'm saying is, I spend a lot of time in the beginning going, yes, I am, no, I'm not. Yes, I am, no, I'm not. In my head, you know, it helped that I lived in a place where the only requirement for living there was a desire to stop drinking. They had a breathalyzer at the desk to make sure the desire was in place at all times. But I didn't want to go back to the street, and that helped me to have that artificial construct around me. But eventually I heard enough in meetings to begin to identify. I heard the words pitiful and incomprehensible, demoralization, and I went, ooh, how did they know? How did they know about me feeling that way? And I began to understand that even though our stories are frequently different from each other's, the details of the stories inside, we're alcoholics, and we can relate to each other. So, you know, when I first got to the Sally, I called my mom and I told her, Mom, I'm in Santa Barbara, California. I'm living at the Salvation Army and I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And I could hear her go, oh. I said, I like it. They're nice people. They're kind. However, they do talk about God. She said, oh, that shouldn't be a problem for you, son. Ever since you were a little boy, you've had a sense of wonder about the world. And I kind of grabbed onto that, and I've held on to it in many ways. You know, part of my understanding of the wonder of the world is that I know a lot of you, and I know your stories, and I we're not drinking, and this fills me with wonder. The fact that this thing works as well as it does, and many times in spite of us. So, you know, I hired one of those sponsor guys and he gave me a commitment. He asked me, you know, he said, can you clean the bathroom and mop the floors? And sure, you know, I used to be a tear tender in the joint. He said, okay, well, that's what that would be helpful. And I loved doing it because it gave me a reason to be in the meeting. And yet, I didn't have to talk to anybody. I just pushed my broom around, swung that mop, and scrubbed the toilet. And you know, after about a month or 2 months, he said, you know, we're going to promote you. We're going to make you the coffee man. Very important job. I said, oh, okay, but it's a promotion. Wow. He said, yeah, you bring cookies. Make sure you bring the good ones. And I said, well, what about the floors? Who's going to do? He said, oh, we're going to get so-and-so to do the floors. I said, all right, I'll be watching him, because those were my floors now. Yeah. That's the way I was loved into AA. I had a sponsor. He never pushed me about anything. He just shared his own experience with me. And he was a busy guy. You know, where I got sober was a place called Fellowship Hall in Santa Barbara, and you had to climb up a flight of stairs to get there. And every night he would stand at the head of those stairs and greet people and shake their hands when they walked up. And so I stood next to him and started doing the same thing. Oh, it's kind of fun to get to know people. Wow. And next thing I knew, I'm looking around the room and I go, oh, I know Sandy and I know Donna and I know, you know, him and her, and I know their names, and we're talking to each other. I've got some friends. Isn't this weird? So I'm looking at the second step. I have always believed in something, as my mom said, you know, a sense of wonder about the world. But somewhere in that very early days, I heard Cubby Selby speak. And I believe he was a member of your group. And he talked about, he quoted something out of the book, AA Comes of Age. They quote an old Spanish philosopher in there who says, those who deny God deny him from their despair at not finding him. Okay. I believe, and I'm going to make that decision. My decision was to turn my will and my life over to the care of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've left it there ever since, and it has done me very well, believe me. In many ways, my understanding of a higher power is Alcoholics Anonymous, is a higher power in my life. The other understandings I have about it, I won't burden you with because they're my understandings. But if you're new and you don't have an understanding of a higher power, if the God word bothers you, if any, just I would ask that you believe this much, that I believe, and that you are welcome to borrow the higher power that I have. You are welcome to borrow Alcoholics Anonymous and learn about it and use it and become a member of a group and become a functioning member of a group and get to mop the floors and make the coffee and bring the cookies. And, you know, and the next thing you know, things have changed in your life. That's been my experience. So, somebody tell me what time I'm going to stop here. Duffy.
Hello, you stop at about 8:32.
8:32.
Yeah, so you have 12 more minutes.
Okay, and right now I've got 8:21. So, good. Thank you. So, as I said, I went to 15 years sober. I'm busy in AA. I'm working for a company named Kinko's I just landed there somehow in their corporate headquarters and was packing boxes for them as a temp. And then they said they hired me. I worked for them for about a month as a temp. And they said, you know, the department's doing better and we think you've got something to do with it. We want to take you and your wife out to dinner. We went to this steakhouse and the president of the corporation was there and my supervisor and her supervisor. And everybody was ordering cocktails. And I said, what'll you have? I said, oh, nothing. Oh, why don't you drink? I said, well, not normally. I said, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have 2 years sober, which is what I had at that time. And the president of the corporation looked at me and said, oh, I'm a member of Al-Anon. And we started talking. And the next day they hired me. I worked for them for about 12 years and they made use of my skills, if you will. They started taking me all around the country on trips and they had an event once a year called the picnic. And they said, hey, we're going to take you to the picnic and you can do this work, but would you make sure some AA meetings take place while we're there? Because this is a big event and some people are nervous about going because they hear there's a lot of drinking. I said, sure. So they made use of me in that way. And I thought I'd be there forever, but I got hurt on the job and my back. So I laid out for a year. And when the time came to go back, I knew things had changed in me. And part of me wanted to get worried about it because I'm an ex-convict and I have no formal education and what am I going to do? And about that time, the chairperson of Intergroup approached me and said, we need a new manager at central office. You think you want that job? It's like, yeah, yes, I do. Absolutely. So I worked there for 11 years. Then I retired. Then we had some problems and I went back and then I retired again. And then they had some more problems and I've been back now 3 years. And I love that job. You know, I love being at central office. I love being right in the middle of the mix. It gives me the opportunity to do many things. But the thing that I do that means the most to me, that I derive the most benefit from personally, is that I'm an active member of our hospital and institution committee. Have been since I first got sober. I would go into any place that would allow me to go in. And I'm happy to tell you that I've been out of prison so long, they let me go back in there now. And I've had a panel at a place called CMC East for a number of years. I also go to meetings at the United States Penitentiary in Lompoc, which is nearby. And I got active on our local committee, and I chaired it, and I did all the things that we end up doing. And then I got active in Southern California Hospital and Institution Committee, and I took the job there of being the liaison to what's called a volunteer advisory task force, which means that I go to Sacramento two or three times a year, and I sit down with the head of the Department of Corrections and his staff, and we talk about how we can help each other. And I am so happy to tell you that the state of California and the Department of Corrections has really loosened up or lightened up or become more open to the fact that, I was sitting in a meeting up there, and they said, we think that maybe people who have been in these institutions would do a better job of carrying the message into these institutions. Like, oh, you finally figured that part out. And they've really lightened up on that, and they're now allowing people who have been, I took a guy back into CMC recently who did the last 22 years of the 35 years that he served in that particular institution. And you could never go back into the same joint you were in before, and now you can. And they're letting people who are actively on parole go back in, depending, it's a warden's approval kind of thing. But it's changed, and I'm really happy and excited about it. And because I've been doing this work and involved in these things, I recently was issued an identification card that allows me to walk into any prison in the state of California, show them my card, and go to an AA meeting. I don't have to go through the clearance process anymore. I'm cleared statewide, and I don't have to go through the metal detectors and searches and all of that sort of thing. That's part of the deal for some of them. And, it only took me 36 years. So there's something for you to look forward to. I mentioned acting. When I retired the first time from central office, my wife said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to be retired." She said, "Yeah, but what are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to be retired." She said, "No, you do something, get out of the house." So I went to City College and took some acting classes, and I got involved in that. And it's just been a great blessing in my life to participate in those activities. I love it. Let me see. So I had notes here to myself. One of the nice things about this Zoom thing is that you can, refer to material. But if I've read all of, sitting in central office, I have a lot of time. I've read all the pamphlets. How many of you can say that? My favorite one happens to be A Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a great pamphlet. If you find it at your central office, or it's P41, order it from New York. It's a great pamphlet. Really does an excellent job of explaining our fellowship. I'm sitting at central office one day, and the volunteer hasn't shown up, which means I get to answer the phones, which I like to do, but I need to remember to take myself off the clock, because you can't get, the reason we have volunteers at central office is so that the person who is answering the phone isn't receiving any compensation for doing that. So that when someone calls, there's another alcoholic who's doing it for fun and for free. And I'm super, if you've ever volunteered at central office, thank you. If you're going to go do it, thank you. My life depends on volunteers in many ways. But I'm sitting there, the volunteer hasn't shown up, the phone rings, so I answer, and woman says, I wonder if you could help me. I came to town yesterday with a friend of mine. She got hurt. She's in Cottage Hospital and she's still not ready to get out. I can't leave her. I had to spend last night in a motel and I really can't afford motels, but I can't leave my friend. And I'm not in any danger of drinking. I'm 12 years sober. I just feel like I need to talk to somebody. Can you talk to me? And I said, absolutely. But I'm alone here. The other line's ringing. Let me put you on hold. I'll get right back to you. I picked up the second line and the woman says, can you help me? I can't seem to stop drinking. I don't know what to do. And I connected line one to line two. You know, they came by the office later that day and they were both doing all right. You know, the newcomer was doing all right because she was having the message of hope carried to her. The one with some time was all right because she was thinking about somebody besides herself. And that's what you guys taught me, is that, you know, when I can take my mind up off all my bad breaks and unfortunate circumstances and the people who don't understand, when I can give a moment of thought to you and your welfare, I'm always better off for it. I want to thank you for this opportunity to talk to you tonight. Thank you, Duffy. I love you. Say hi to Jeff for me. Natalie Haynes, Jeff Haynes, all you guys, Sharon Crane, love you all. Bye.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Tim. That was wonderful. And Morgan's going to unmute all.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy.
Tim, beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your pajamas.
Thank you.
Just make sure. Okay. And that should be in the chat room, chat box now. Tonight, we are celebrating the following birthdays. And Morgan is going to actually put all of your birthdays up on the screen. Our first birthday is for Lexi M for 2 years. Happy birthday, Lexi. Our next birthday is for Amanda J for 3 years. Happy birthday. Our next birthday is also for 3 years for Hannah H. Happy birthday, Hannah. Our next birthday is for Bob St. J for 8 years. Happy birthday, Bob. Our next birthday is for 18 years for Richard H. Happy birthday, Richard. Next birthday is for 20 years for Stephanie M. Happy birthday, Stephanie. Our next birthday is for 22 years for Mark W. Happy birthday. And our last birthday for the evening is for 44 years for Tom N. Happy birthday, Tom, and happy birthday to all of you birthdays tonight. Thank you for letting us celebrate with you. That total of 120 years with an average of 15 years. Special announcements for the evening. Please pay attention here. Okay. Nominations for our next secretary are now open and can be sent to the email pacificgrouplosangeles@gmail.com. So once again, if you are a regular attender and you would like to nominate a regular attender, please email that nomination to pacificgrouplosangeles@gmail.com. The nominees typically have been a secretary of another Pacific Group meeting and have a significant amount of time. At next week's meeting, those nominees that you are sending in will be on the meeting at special announcements and introduce themselves. Then the voting will begin May 7th, which is the Thursday after next Wednesday, when you'll see all the nominees. Then the voting will be open and it will be held via email using a third-party voting service. Emails were sent today to confirm your registration for the election. So if you would like to vote, you're a regular attender at the synagogue and you did not get receive an email from the Pacific Group Elections email, then once again, send your email to the Pacific Group Los Angeles at gmail.com.